It's showtime.
Okay, Tokyo,
South America,
Australia, Germany,
UK,
Africa.
Here we go. Head on with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head on with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bycod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy. Well, wasn't that just annoying? 22 minutes late to the program, not for want of trying, but hey, I'm here and you're there, and gosh, people who take the podcast instead of listen live, hi y'all, it's like nothing at all even happened. But this program does run live, and when it runs late and runs live, well, you know it. Hi, I'm Bob Kincaid. It is the last day of September 2019. We're a week into autumn. October begins tomorrow. 3 weeks from Bridge Day here in the hills and hollers of almost level West by Cold Trump Virginia stand. And what I started saying last week gets a little more true every day. However weird yesterday was, today is going to be weirder. And however weird today is, make no mistake, tomorrow will be weirder still. This is The Horn. HeadOn.live is where you'll find us on the interweb tubes. If you'd like to join the merry, wacky, zany, real-time multimedia extravaganza that is The Horn chat room when this program is live, well, just pop on over to HeadOn.live and click on chat room. If you don't already have one, pick out a screen name and a password. And the minute you show up in the room, Anatole and Faith Ann and Jimmy and Squeaky will all give you a big howdy, and you'll be capably moderated by longtime inveterate, indefatigable veteran chat room moderator Sparky, who, although a third-stage guild navigator, has chosen not to fold space today. And you'll also be moderated by pinch-hit midweek chat room utility moderator and all-around great guy, Steve from Georgistan. And yes indeed, this is the final day of fundraising free radio. We get back to the grindstone tomorrow. So there's that, too. And we have thanks to send out, because there are thank yous, a couple for the end of the month. We need to give out our 28th and 29th thank yous, and that would be thanks very kindly to Clarence and Rico, Clarence down in South Carolina, Rico in DeBerg. Thanks to Randy in PA and Charlene and Sharon and Philip for the 28th of the month. Thank you all very kindly. And also, for the final day of the month, it's thank you time for our Patreon subscribers. And so that means thanks going out to Terrace in California. And thank you to Hamilton. And thank you to Brother Deacon Asa. And thank you to James. Thank you to Scott in Wisconsin. Thank you to Lori. Thank you very kindly to John. Thank you to Ruth. Thanks to Nick, and thanks to Alex, and thanks to our pal Horst in Taiwan. Thanks to John, and thanks to Barb. Thanks to Frank, and to Jeremy in Vermont. Thank you to Joey. Thank you to Jim. Thank you to Annette. Thanks, Barbara. Thank you to Ron, and thank you to Aaron. Thanks to Tina, to Kimberly, to Carl. Thank you to our buddy Hung Like Jesus. And thanks to Colin and Vernon. And thank you very kindly to Andrea, as well as to TJ. Thank you, TJ. Thank you to Albert in North Carolina. Thank you to Frank in California. Thanks to Brendan and James. Thank you, Trey. Thank you, Glenn. Thank you, Alec. Thank you, Kay. Joanne, thank you. Thank you to Marty. Thank you to John and Kat in Ohio. Thanks to Joyce. Thank you to Robin. And thank you to Greg. And thanks for the new sign-up to Brock and Baltimore Bob. Thank you very kindly. Much appreciated. All of it. This is how we keep the program on the air. And so thanks to those who go with Patreon, and thanks to those who just go with PayPal, and thanks to all of you who participate via the U.S. mail as well. Okay. So that's the housekeeping. And 80. There were 80 or more tweets sent out from the disordered mind of a sick president this weekend. Now, I don't know if it was precisely 80 or I lost count. But it occurred to me that it would be highly ironic, if not an outright dog whistle, if it turned out that the number of his weekend tweets was, of course, 88. Because 88 has a symbolic value to Trump's base. You know, the Nazis. Mm-hmm. Because H is the eighth letter, and Heil, and right, thus 88. And I don't know who would have the stomach to count them all, but we do know that there were 80 or more rage tweets against people actually trying to uphold their oath to the Constitution of the United States. You see, Nitwit Nero thinks that the oath should be to him and not to the Constitution. And it's obvious that he treated his oath to the Constitution as purely, shall we say, decorative. Because he certainly has no interest in following it. Because the news just kept breaking all weekend long. We're past the point of no return for those days when the news cycle would slow down a little bit. It's perpetual now and relentless. But I, for one, am grateful for it, because it means that more and more information is coming out about this criminal presidency. So now we know, among other things. And listen, so one of the more pernicious doctrines in the criminal law is that of felony fill-in-the-blank, like felony murder. And a lot of people have had their lives ruined because of that particular piece of law. For instance, let's say your buddies say, "Hey man, can you take us to the store?" You're like, "Oh hell, all right. I'm the only guy here with any damn gasoline." So your buddies pile into the car, you take them to the store, you sit in the car, they go in the store and rob the place and murder the clerk. Guess what? You've just become guilty of felony murder. You didn't know. you had no way of knowing, but you are subject in, for instance, death penalty states to being killed by the in the name of the state for being utterly ignorant and stupid enough to take your ne'er-do-well buddies to the store. You might, It is a brutal but long-standing theory of criminal liability. And, of course, as is the case with everything in the criminal law in this country, it has been applied unequally, to say the least. So, if you think of things within that framework, then consider that every cabinet official who was on the Ukraine phone call on July the 25th, well, consider that they're all sitting at the wheel while Donald Trump goes in and robs the Rippy Mart. The latest added to that list is, of course, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo. He graduated first in his class at West Point, you know. Oh, he's a real, live, honest-to-God, wily coyote, super genius, that Mike Pompeo, who graduated first in his class at West Point. Sat there on the call, heard it, didn't make a sound, didn't utter a peep. Bill Barr, Bill Frogman Barr, is apparently a little less than happy these days, because Nitwit Nero lumped him in alongside Rudy Giuliani. And he doesn't, he's not particularly fond of that. Pence was in on it. Pence knew. So, if that's the case, wouldn't we say that any cabinet official who heard that call and said nothing is equally culpable? And then there's the deeply sickening possibility, I would say likelihood. I saw this over the weekend, and then just saw it again when David in South Carolina stand sent it along. Bill Barr to prosecution in his personal capacity sought to have foreign intelligence agencies discredit the U.S. intelligence about the 2016 election shenanigans. Or, instead of shenanigans, let's say criminality. Yeah. So, he's been swanning around in foreign countries of late, trying to get foreign intelligence agencies to jump in and say things that aren't true. In a more criminal context, we'd call that witness tampering. But then, of course, there's also the other piece of breaking news, and it's, like I said, it's just going to keep breaking, that he was the one behind helping Nitwit Nero try to shake down Scott Morrison, the Prime Minister of Australia. Bad and getting worse. And, of course, the threat remains that if we do not address this, then our government will stand forever changed for the worse. And because it was the weekend, that means that the weekend shows, the weekend interview programs, were, of course, bedlam. Stephen Miller, Lindsey Graham Cracker. Let's take a quick listen, just to get a taste of the crazy. Stephen Miller went on with Chris Wallace over at Fox News TV Radio Rwanda. And then, of course, Lindsey Graham went on CBS with Face the Nation. In neither instance did it go anything that you or I would describe as well. And this morning over on my little filthy morning habit, I thought Joe Scarborough was going to have a baby live on air.
And the president's usual strategy to complicate, deflect, and distract doesn't appear to be working when you look at those polls. The president's aides and allies were all over the place yesterday trying to defend him. Here's senior White House policy advisor Stephen Miller.
Both the director of national intelligence and the inspector general said they also found his comments to be credible and a matter of urgent concern, and they turned it over to the Justice Department. All that, they thought that this was a credible complaint.
And they're wrong, Chris.
Whose basis?
Chris, I've worked in the government now, the federal government now, for nearly 3 years. I know what the deep state looks like.
Pee-wee Herman Goering touting his long career of 3 years in government service. And then starts blathering about the deep state. So the Director of National Intelligence is wrong. The Inspector General is wrong. And only Trump and his little Renfield, Stephen Miller, have it right.
I know the difference between a whistleblower and a deep state operative. This is a deep state operative, pure and simple.
The president has the State Department. He's got the CIA. He's got the Pentagon. He's got a number of other agencies. Why did he use three private lawyers to get information on Biden from the Ukrainian government rather than go through all of the agencies of his government?
Two different points. Number one.
Answering my question?
John Durham... As you know.
Wait a minute. John Durham is investigating something completely different. I'm asking you a direct question. Why did the president use private attorneys rather than go to the State Department? If you don't know, that's an acceptable answer. But let's not talk about John Durham, who's investigating the Trump investigation.
There's two issues that were brought up
on
the phone
call. I'm not asking two issues. Why did he do it?
Chris,
I shouldn't be laughing. This is not funny. But the bare naked criminality of a neo-maxi zoom dweeby like little Stephen Miller. Jesus. As Brother Deacon Asa says, how is too young to order a beer Stephen Miller senior anything, let alone senior fucking White House advisor? Well, because he's a senior White House advisor the same way as Renfield was the senior bug-eating advisor to Dracula. Only one must admit Renfield was considerably more likable.
I understand that you have your question, I have my answer. There's two issues that were brought up in the phone call.
You have your non-answer at this point. simply asking a question as to why.
Is Adam Schiff guilty of interfering in our election?
I'm simply asking you a question as to why the president didn't use his government. You apparently are not going to answer that. I'll ask you another question. Why did the president decide to withhold $391 million in military aid to Ukraine last July?
The president has
that had been approved by Congress. Why did the president, if the argument is corruption, why did the president go against his own Pentagon and his own State Department?
Chris, I don't understand how you can ask that question while at the same time admonishing the president for wanting to get to the bottom of perhaps one of the biggest corruption scandals concerning Ukraine in the last few years.
And what would that be? Oh, yeah, sure. Mm-hmm. And somebody who isn't Trump. Yeah, you know, we may have to start putting a disclaimer at the beginning of this program that dining during this program, when this program is live, is not advisable because this is nauseating. It sounds like Chris Wallace is questioning Stephen Miller forcefully, but he is still deferring to him vis-a-vis his position in government. When you do that, you're not challenging, you're filleting. Or fluffing. And what I mean by that is that at some point in time, and this country has seen it in its history, during the McCarthy era, at long last, sir, asked a lawyer named Welch, at long last, sir, have you no decency? And we're reaching that with anybody. See, this is the trouble with access journalism. You want these multimillionaires in the media want access to these people, no matter how awful, how corrupt, how vulgar, how ignorant, how mendacious, how duplicitous they are. And they will put point a camera at their faces and let them start talking. And as you see with Chris Wallace here, they'll press them a little bit. But eventually you reach a point, and I'd say that it got passed several times in this particular interview this weekend. You reach a point where you have to look at him and say, you're just a liar, aren't you? Lying is what you do. At one point in time, as you heard a couple of minutes ago, Miller started trying to trot out this unmitigated horse shit that somehow Adam Schiff has done something wrong. That's one of their new attack plans. That's wing attack plan derp. But Chris Wallace, well, I guess the operative theory is that maybe these so-called serious interview programs work on the principle of give them enough rope, because then you've got a record of the mendacity. That's the only thing I can come up with by way of an explanation.
I'm not admonishing anybody. I'm simply asking, why did he go?
Chris.
I mean,
this is
an exercise in obfuscation. Why did the president go against his own Pentagon and State Department?
There's a tone of judgment in all of your questions. So, yes, you are admonishing. And I can't speak to
whatever... No, that's judgment on your part, sir.
So that was the Stephen Miller thing. Well, then we get the Lindsey Graham thing. And it, hard as it may be to believe, that was an even hotter, bigger mess. And I say so, I say that, because Princess Lindsay is a lawyer, or at least supposed to be one. But I tell you what, I wouldn't want Lindsey Graham defending me in court if anything more than a jaywalking ticket was on the line, because he doesn't even know the basic. There are basic rules of evidence that he's apparently forgotten. I haven't tried a case in ages, and the minute that I heard what he's about to say in this clip, I immediately yelled out, "Good God! Rule 801D2A, admission by party opponent, is specifically excluded from being referred to as hearsay." Trump is a party opponent. Reporting what he said isn't hearsay at all. It is an admission. And any lawyer who jumps up and says, "Your Honor, I object, hearsay," should immediately be told, "Counselor, sit the fuck down. Your objection's overruled. It isn't hearsay. Go read Rule 801D2A.
This is hearsay. The complaint on a number of fronts is matched by the call record.
The transcript and the complaint are not matched.
The reference to the DNC server.
Please let me talk.
Will you do a favor? I'm laying out the facts here.
No, you're not.
You're making an argument. The repeated reference to Joe Biden.
Here's
all those things
Joe
are laid
Biden
out here. The fact that the attorney general was brought up.
You know, you've got an opinion, I got an opinion. You got me on the show, tell me what I think.
Lindsay's a little bit pissy. Because he's in a box. He's in a corner. And he got there by himself. He had the paint can. He didn't even use a brush. He used a roller. And now he's standing on the only unpainted spot on the floor, and it's over in a corner, and it's about just big enough for him to stand on his tippy toes and stay out of the wet paint. There was a time when Lindsey Graham said of Donald Trump that he was a liar. And a number of other things. And then, I don't know, we've speculated ever since. Is it all that sweet Russian rubles that were filtered through the National Ruble Association into his war chest? Is that it? Is it the fact that the Russians hacked the RNC at the same time that they hacked the DNC, and they've got the pictures of Lindsay in his little Bo Peep costume? I don't know. But he has decided to sell out the entirety of whatever credibility he had for Donald Trump, for somebody who will not protect him, for somebody who's thrown him under the bus before and will throw him back under there again.
Check out the master cylinder. Check out the brake lines. There you go, Lindsay.
Damnation.
I think Mueller did a good job for the country, and there was nothing there. I think this whole thing is a sham. I can't believe we're talking about impeaching the president based on an accusation based on hearsay.
Now, see, there's the magic word. Hearsay. Again, if a party opponent in a proceeding says it, it is not hearsay. It is an admission. I mean, just jot it down somewhere. Rule 801D2A of the Federal Rules of Evidence. Doesn't matter if the trial is criminal or civil. 801D2A says that if a party opponent says it and it is offered up as evidence, a hearsay objection will not lie. And that's kind of a huge deal. Now, if Lindsay's previous day job had been, and I'm not casting any aspersions, but if he'd been a plumber, or if he'd been a diesel mechanic, you'd go, well, you know, okay. I mean, I bet he knows a lot about diesel mechanics and about plumbing. So what if he's not intimately versed in the curious intricacies of something as Byzantine as the federal rules of evidence? No big deal. But he's a lawyer. He has been a commissioned officer in the Judge Advocate General Corps of the United States Air Force. Those people try cases under the Uniform Code of Military Justice, wherein the federal rules of evidence are at work most of the time, including things like what constitutes hearsay and where is where do you find it? So one of two things is obvious in this. Either Lindsay knows and he's lying, or he doesn't know and probably shouldn't be heading the Senate Judiciary Committee. And it's up to us to choose which one. Note coming from James in Illinois, where to jump off. They were all in on this, and no one stood up and said this is wrong. These guys are such a collection of ne'er-do-well losers. You know Mrs. Pence, we call her Mother. You know Mother Pence is pissed off at Mr. Pence. He was just a loser governor whose career was over. He could have gone back into the radio biz, but no, he had to go back to Washington, and this time live in government housing. Is Mrs. Pence going to be the new Martha Mitchell? Someone needs to. Well, no, it's not going to be Mother Pence, because she's apparently gotten on board. That story fascinates me out of election night when Pence went to kiss her and she rebuffed him and said, "You got what you want." But now she's got her own Twitter account and she's going to be tweeting about how awesome it is to be the second lady or the wife of the vice maggot. She got dragged pretty big time over that, by the way. I mean, she got enough shade thrown at her over that she probably doesn't show up in photographs anymore. But this is where the madness has led. But out of all of it, the fact that, if you're a member of government and if you take your constitutional oath seriously, how do you respond when this jiggling wad of adipose insecurities and jealousies starts talking about wanting to have people killed? Because that happened.
Representative Adam Schiff illegally made up a fake and terrible statement, pretended it to be mine as the most important part of my call to the Ukrainian president, and read it aloud to Congress and the American people. It bore no relationship to what I said on the call. Arrest for treason?
Now, in a sane world, the appropriate response would be to say, well, no, you idiot. Treason is very well defined. You may have committed it, but Adam Schiff did not. And if you try to have somebody arrested for being your political enemy, then that in itself is a level of corruption that rises to the textbook definition of high crimes and misdemeanors, and you'll be impeached over it. You might recall that in point of fact, Don McGahn told Chlamydia Claudius exactly that back before he bailed out, back when Nitwit Nero was trying to use the awesome power of the presidential executive branch control over law enforcement agencies in the federal purview to go after Comey, to go after Hillary. But we don't live in that world anymore. We live in a world where I guess anything can happen. And of course, there was another communique from Mother Russia, in which, no, really, get the hockey puck. The Russians claimed that it would require their permission for any conversations between Trump and his master Putin to be made public. Really? The Russian government has declared that it has veto power over how members of Congress may pursue their oath to the Constitution. I mean, there's been a lot of ugly shit come out, but that's among the ugliest. And it's also among the most obvious. They think, and they may have, sufficient compromise to control the actions of the President of the United States. Jesus, I remember. Well, I mean, I don't remember, but people like Southern Baptists back when, in 1960, when John Kennedy was running for president, they said, well, if you elect one of them mackerel snapping Catholics, one of them Mary worshipers, why, you'll have the Pope right there in the Oval Office telling the president how to run the country. God damn it, we can't stand that. And it got so bad that Kennedy had to deliver an address about religious freedom in the United States and assure people that he wouldn't be taking his marching orders from the Pope at Rome. Now, we have good reason to believe, understanding how dangerous that word is, we have good reason to believe that this president takes his orders from the Kremlin. And that is horrifying. Simply horrifying. Note coming in from Kyle in Kentucky, Stan. The president of the United States is using threats of violence as a political tool to get people to acquiesce to his demands. Is it fair to say that he's acting as a terrorist? Stochastic terrorism is a real thing. S-T-O-C-H-A-S-T-I-C. Stochastic terrorism. I think I spelled it right. And yes, he acts as a stochastic terrorist every day. The hashtag Civil War II began trending over the weekend because he said that the country might erupt into civil war if he's impeached. And over on the various gun goober websites, there was no small number of people who were going, "Yeah, hell yeah, ew." Those were not Democrats or liberals or progressives or centrists. Those were his base. And it's, again, terrifying. "Holy shit," says Kyle, "it's all coming out. He tried to get the Australian PM to discredit Mueller and do an investigation into the origins of the Mueller investigation, and the Justice Department acknowledged it, throwing him under the bus because they know his time is up. And Pompeo listened in all the calls. They're all going down. Thank goodness the press is finally doing their job. It's all coming out. Trump best cut a deal and resign now. He's done here." And, of course, Hillary's emails have been locked down again. Albert asking, "How can anything in one of Hillary's infamous emails affect the U.S. State Department today?" Well, they can't. But it's a way of making people shut up. Jimmy in the Great Northwest says, Stephen Miller, why so angry? Calm the hell down. Kyle asking, serious question, what kind of crazy shit and how much of it is Stephen Miller hopped up on? What's wrong with him? People, and I use that term very loosely in his case, in their right state of mind, don't talk that fast. Actually, Kyle, you would be surprised. When they're lying, they do talk fast. That's one of the earmarks that's one of the tells of a bad liar. But the idea, and make no mistake, in the way in which Trump communicates or attempts to, asking something like arrest for treason means I want him arrested for treason. Now, is there some maggot out there in the Department of Justice who will be willing to act on that? At this point in time, it seems like Bill Barr's in for a penny, in for a pound. And I wouldn't be surprised if he tried it. Again, historically, it wouldn't be the first time. Recall that it has been used in the past. John Brown, a citizen of the state of Kansas, was tried for treason against the Commonwealth of Virginia, and he hanged for it. Thomas Jefferson tried to have Aaron Burr executed over a charge of treason, when in fact there is data that there's actual history to suggest that if anyone was behaving treasonously, it might well have been Jefferson, because Jefferson knew or should have known about the treasonous activities of General James Wilkinson, who was in the pay of the Spanish crown, with whom we were not on the best of terms. And Aaron Burr narrowly escaped having his neck stretched for having had the temerity to offend Mr. Jefferson. You know, the president who raped slaves. Sorry, it's just a fact. What's that, Flavio? Flavio says civil war. Trump has already submitted a medical waiver to exempt himself from the civil war he's trying to start. That's from someone called Mike Farb. Yeah, I'm sure his bone spurs are acting up something fierce right now. I don't know if I've got the stomach for it. Mike in Cascadia asks, hey, Bob, you going to play the Jim Shorts Jordan versus Jake Tapper clip? I've heard that thing about a dozen times. It's pretty nauseating. Maybe we need to put it to a vote. Scott in San Diego, deep state nonsense. These morons. The only deep thing involved here is the pit they're putting America into and the bullshit they've been shoveling at us since Trump took office. If voters don't have the good sense to show Trump the door in 2020, we are entirely screwed. We're all screwed, Bob. Same thing goes for holding on to the House and retaking the Senate. I couldn't agree more. And I'll take this moment to remind us, dare to dream. We don't need a majority of 51-49 in the Senate, because that would mean that you had to count on Joe Manchin to do the right thing every time. And that's just not going to happen. Got to dare to dream. Got to dare to think about a Senate that's missing about 20 Republicans replaced by Democrats. Ron in Raleigh says, really? Does this tin pot dictator in a third-rate country with an economy smaller than California think this is? The fucking UN? Russia shouldn't even have veto power in that body. No, they shouldn't. And but you know, that's how it goes with your authoritarian dictator types, of which Vlad Putin is absolutely one. But he wouldn't say something like that if he didn't know that he had control of the President of the United States. Might just be worth trying to get some of those call logs out of Pootie just to see if it would push him far enough to release the PP tape. Not that anybody wants to see it, but we would finally have proof once and for all that, yes, he is a foreign asset. By proof, I mean proof to the extent that we don't already, which we kind of do. Stephen Miller says, Steve in New York, his rubber girlfriend is clearly not giving him what he needs. God, you made me think of that. Damn it, Steve. Under the subject line, Civil War, Clarence in South Carolina says, Bob, what do we do if the Trump followers start massive shooting attacks against progressives like us? I participated in combat in Vietnam. It was a terrible experience. Clarence, not to be flip, my friend, but we're already there. The new Joker movie is coming out. Someone inside, I know, contradiction in terms, Army Intelligence has already begun warning that there may be another Aurora style movie theater attack with that film. Rambo Last Blood is in theaters now, and it is little more, if at all, than a love letter to violent maggots. Again, the password is stochastic. S-T-O-C-H-A-S-T-I-C. Stochastic. They're shooting up our discount stores. They're shooting up busy Friday night bar districts. They're shooting up schools. Synagogues. We're near to the first anniversary of the Tree of Life massacre. Once again, inspired by the President of the United States of America, who nonetheless had the gall to tweet out happy Rosh Hashanah Jewish New Year message over the weekend. Yeah. What do? Well, we need better laws in regard to firearms. You know, one of the reasons that we have the Second Amendment was because one of the things that the framers of the Constitution wanted least of all was a standing army. There was an ancient rule in Rome that no military could come inside what was called the pomerium, basically the boundary of Rome proper. Because they felt that if you had soldiers in the streets, they might tend to behave in soldierly fashion sooner or later, and they were right. Because eventually troops were brought across the pomerium. The British were not crazy about having a huge standing army. And so the framers thought that if everybody had to be part of a well-regulated militia, that we would have an army when we needed an army, and otherwise we wouldn't. That didn't last. That is why, but even the such standing army as we had through most of the 19th century was minimal in nature. The War of 1812 was largely fought by volunteers and state militias. The Civil War itself, Abraham Lincoln challenged constitutional authority by levying his own troops from within the militias of the several states. But we have a standing army now, and we have a National Guard. And if the maggots do start randomly, or not so randomly, shooting at people that they determine to be their enemies, it will be incumbent upon the United States government to understand that they are an insurrectional force and to put them down accordingly. Because all that, you can have my guns when you pry them from my cold dead fingers. Well, you know, when you get hellfire missiled from a drone or a Black Hawk helicopter, there ain't much in the way of fingers left to pry away from the gun. There ain't much gun. It gets blown to kingdom come, too. And by the way, under the subject line, liars, James in Illinois says, the Stephen Miller interview on Fox News, the Jim Shorts Jordan interview with Chris Cuomo, and every interview ever with Kellyanne Conway on behalf of Nitwit Nero are all of the same fast-talking liar variety that you described. I believe, says James, you're on to something. Yeah, I tend to think so, too. Randy in PA says, here's how it appears to be. The intelligence community plays five-dimensional chess. The press plays checkers. Well, to be fair, the media have one hand tied behind their backs because they've got to go digging around trying to get people to tell them what reality looks like in this most unreal of situations. So it is simply breathtaking. Rudy Giuliani's been had documents subpoenaed by the House Intelligence Committee, and he's not sure whether or not he's going to honor the subpoena. You know, he's not protected, I don't think, by executive privilege. It's just plain old attorney-client privilege to the extent that even that exists. Recall that that it was held that Michael Cohen did not enjoy attorney-client privilege with Donald Trump because he was not acting as a lawyer, but as a fixer. Guess what Giuliani's doing? If he ignores that subpoena, a bar complaint to the state bar of the state of New York might be taken rather seriously. Oh, and what I was saying early on about Bill Barr and his machinations, it wasn't just Australia. Barr asked Nitwit Nero to give him introductions to leaders in Italy, Australia, and Ukraine so that he could go about the business of trying to dummy up and shake down those countries. There are apparently, probably still in that code word protected computer, notes from and perhaps even a transcript or a recording of the call that he placed to Italian Prime Minister Giuseppe Conte on or about September the 5th. And Barr himself had gone to Italy. Jesus, these people are filthy. Even Judge Napolitano over on Fox News TV Radio Rwanda says it is arguably impeachable what Trump did. And being as how it is Morian Monday, there's also some comedy involved. I say comedy because of the person who said the following. It happened earlier today. In the pages of the Washington Post, former Senator Jeff Flake, he of the rubber-tipped arrows, declared, 2 years ago I stood in the Senate chamber and said, there are times when we must risk our careers in favor of our principles, and then I voted for everything that Donald Trump asked me to vote in favor of. No, that party didn't use. He said, in my case, I had not supported the president's election. 1 year into his presidency, I knew that I couldn't support his re-election. While I had hoped that I could still run for re-election to the Senate in 2018 as someone who would help provide a check on the president's worst impulses, it soon became apparent that this was not what Republican primary voters in my state were looking for. Whatever reservations they might have had when they voted for Donald Trump 1 year into his presidency, they wanted a senator who was all in. And who, for all intents and purposes, was all in. Yeah, I don't care what you say when the mic's in front of your face. I care what you do when they call the goddamn vote. And he voted with Trump time after time after time after time. Nonetheless, he continued and said, our country will have more presidents, but principles, well, we get just one crack at those. For those who want to put America first, it's critically important at this moment in the life of our country that we all, here and now, do just that. Trust me when I say that you can go elsewhere for a job, but you cannot go elsewhere for a soul. Yeah, to me, that needs the tinny tinkling sound of a whorehouse piano in the background. That's why I said it was comical. Jeff Flake telling people to say it. No, because Jeff Flake, you'll notice he even admits it. He didn't run for re-election because he knew he was going to get stomped in the primary. Not because he could no longer stand to work around Donald Trump, because he kept... Hey, Jeff Flake voted for that massive goddamn tax cut that in a few years will beggar the entire country. Yeah, right. Steve in New York says, Jeff Flake, what an appropriate last name. Indeed. And by the way, the Jim Shorts Jordan interview on CNN. Can anybody, feel free to take a run at it if you'd like. Can anybody explain to me why he's the guy you would book to talk about Trump? I mean, granted, he sits on the same committee with. Is he on Intel too? I know he's on. I know he's on Judiciary, or maybe I've got it backwards. But the man is morally filthy. Note that he's willing to look the other way on Trump's crimes, and it's just par for the course. Because he was willing to look the other way when young men at The Ohio State University were being raped by their doctor. And yet, for some reason, some genius producer over at CNN booked him to talk to Jake Tapper. Why book him? Asks Steve in New York rhetorically. Easy. Comic relief.
Defenders in the House, Congressman Jim Jordan of Ohio. Thanks so much for joining us today. So it is not just Democrats rebuking the president over the phone call. A number of Republicans have expressed concerns too. Take a listen.
This remains deeply troubling.
Bishop
and,
Willard.
We'll see where it leads, but the first reaction is troubling.
There's a lot of disturbing allegations.
Right? I want to say to the president, this is not okay. It isn't, that conversation is not okay.
That's your fellow Ohio Republican Mike Turner there. The list goes on. Republican Senator Ben Sasse called it very troubling. Republican Governors Phil Scott and Charlie Baker support the impeachment inquiry. Do you have any problem?
Yeah, it's all very troubling. I guess that's the same thing as Susan Collins saying that she's disappointed. She runs around being disappointed all the time. Now Bishop Willard's troubled, and Will Hurd is troubled, but that troubledness extends only so far. And I dare suggest that it will not be troubling enough to garner their vote on an obvious slam dunk charge relating to his behavior in regard to Ukraine. Oh, by the way, attention, Steve in New York. This is via Brother Deacon Asa. That's not a rubber girlfriend Steve Miller has. Miller's girlfriend is of the silicone variety, finished in titanium oxide. Don't ask me how I know. You know that's the most surefire way to get people to ask you how you know, right? Meanwhile, going back to the issue of what we do if they do start shooting. And remember that the guy who got that ball rolling was not Trump directly. It was Cantaloupe Caligula citing approvingly the words of a pastor, a minister of the saving grace gospel of Jesus Christ. Yeah, Robert Jeffress of the First Baptist Church of Dallas, who is far more political than he is religious. That church's 501c3 status should have been yanked years ago. But oh well. Les with a note asking, why should any black person be for gun control when the Fuhrer just called his already gunned up Nazi followers to get it bloody to save him from removal in prison? It's finally been made plain what I always knew would be coming. Would they be successful? No. But I don't want my family to be part of the collateral damage just so Trump can declare national emergencies to save himself. I understand. Todd with a note. Please drag Susan Collins through her self-created mud. She does require attention. Expose her Biore face. Ooh, Biore. You know, outside of a commercial, I'll bet this is the only radio program today that has a Biore reference. Yeah, you can't count on her either.
She'll be disappointed.
And then she'll do whatever it is that Trump wants done. Remember, we have a credibly accused serial sex abuser and rapist on the Supreme Court specifically because of Susan Collins. And we're finding out who Nitwit Nero thinks his besties are in the Senate. He was tweeting earlier over the weekend about how awesome Senator Shelley Moore Capito is because she introduced a bill in the Senate to give Tangerine Tiberius billions of dollars for his stupid fucking wall. Meanwhile, her own state is burning up, still burning up, in an opioid crisis brought on by the kind of people who keep Shelley Moore Capito in power. And people are still poisoned here on a daily basis, and she says nothing. But Donald Trump wanted to pat her on the head so that she'd remember to vote to acquit him when he's impeached. Did you say Jeff Fake? Ron asks. He sounds so reasonable, yet he was born without a spine. It would be nice if he had the strength of his rhetoric. Yeah, it would be, but he doesn't. Steve asks, deeply troubling, is it too over the top to imagine Bishop Willard in 1943 saying he finds Hitler a bit excessively nationalistic? No, it's not over the top. It's more than accurate. Yeah, no spine, says Steve in New York. Job of the flake. Ew. And there's that dinner warning again. Ron in Raleigh says, I'm thinking. Is this where Obergruppenfuhrer Miller met his girlfriend? With a link to sexy real sex dolls. Probably so. You know, one can imagine a future scenario in which that's how true AI comes into existence, where the machines come to life. It might just be, a computer-programmed latex sex doll that has to lay there and take it from the likes of Stephen Miller, and finally develops full-on consciousness. And, no, oh no, get off me, right? Whew. So we are halfway through the program now. By the way, this is Conversation Radio. If you'd like to chime in, you're more than welcome. You know the numbers, right? The stress line is 844-843-4676, 844-THE-HORN. And, of course, over on Skype, Bob Kincaid Horn gets you right through. For some reason or another, there's been a problem with the direct dial number, and it doesn't ring here. I don't know. But I'm making sure that the... Trying to make sure that the Bluetooth connects to... okay. To the gizmo box. Doesn't seem to want to right now. But let's go back to Jim Shorts Jordan just for the humor value of it. Remember, Jake Tapper had just asked him if he was disturbed by any of his Republican colleagues being disturbed.
Problem with a U.S. president asking a foreign power to work with his personal attorney and the U.S. attorney to, quote, look into his political rivals.
A couple of things. I don't have any problem with the call. We've now seen the transcript. The president of Ukraine said that there was no pressure. He was not pushed. Look, if Democrats want to impeach because Rudy Giuliani talked to a couple of Ukrainians, good luck with that. I don't think the American people think that's the appropriate course of action. I think they see this for what it is. This is just one of the many and unending attacks the Democrats have leveled against this president. The Democrats just put us through 3 years of this phony Russia collusion investigation, and now on the heels of that, they come right back with this. We've all seen the transcript. There's nothing there. So I respectfully disagree with my colleagues who think that there needs to be a...
You know, for nothing there, there's an awful lot of something in those documents for nothing. But it's pretty obvious if you compare that with what Pee Wee Herman Goering said to Chris Wallace, with what Lindsay said from down beneath the fainting couch to, I can't remember her name over there at CBS, then it becomes abundantly obvious that this is the talking point. Wow, there's nothing there that was illegal. I mean, all he was trying to do was shake down the president of a foreign country to try to harm the guy who... depending on which poll you look at, there's 15 or 20 points out in front of him. I mean, that's all. Well, this just in from Arnold up in PA. Gave up on making dinner thanks to your program, threw out all the fixings, and began drinking the whiskey straight. Sometimes that's just what you have to do. And meanwhile, Arnold's lovely wife, Cheryl, offers the following. Somehow, I doubt that no is Stephen Miller's safe word. Yeah, that gets the cowbell. So back to Jim Schwartz.
Further inquiry here.
Well, let's talk about the transcript, because in that transcript, President Trump says, this is with the Ukrainian president who desperately needed hundreds of millions of dollars in aid, including military aid, to beat back Russian aggression. President Trump says there's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people wanted to find out about that. That's not accurate, but in any case, that so whatever you can do with the attorney general would be great. Biden went around bragging he stopped the prosecution, so if you could look into it, it sounds horrible to me. Again, the description of the matters there is inaccurate, but you really don't have any problem with the president of the United States leveraging his power to push a foreign leader to investigate a political rival?
What I have a problem is what the Democrats are doing. Understand what happened here, Jake. You had a bureaucrat who didn't like...
That's like Jim Shorts Jordan saying, what I have a problem with is not the doctor raping the boys whose assistant coach I was. What I have a problem with is the boys complaining about being raped by the doctor. That's what I've got a problem with, says Jim Shorts Jordan. I forget where I was going when I heard a little snippet of NPR, a reference to an interview they did with Jim Shorts Jordan. And they played something similar, because he says the same thing no matter where he goes. And it occurred to me to wonder if anybody there in any of these news organizations stops for a moment and says, listen, wait a minute. When the best we can get is a guy who is credibly accused of turning his back on boys who were being raped, maybe he's not the guy we want on our air. The thing is, you can report what these fuckers say. You can report their lies. You can even report that what they say are lies. And you don't have to have them sitting on set. This is theater. This is not journalism. You bring them on because you know that they're gonna wind up in clips, and you're going to get free publicity for your network out of it for several days, just like what I'm doing now.
The president.
Wait. What are you talking about?
We know he didn't like the president.
No, we don't know that.
The Inspector General says there's an indicia of arguable political bias. That is Washington speak for this guy didn't like the president.
Let's go into that, because I have that up here.
Let me finish my statement. A bureaucrat who didn't like the president files a claim saying the president did something wrong on a call. This guy wasn't on the call. Someone else told him about the call. So the White House does something that's never been done before. They actually release the transcript. We see the transcript. There's nothing there. But the Democrats say, we don't care. We're going to move towards impeachment. They don't care about the facts. They don't care about the truth. And you know why we know that? Because Nancy Pelosi did a press conference the day before and said she was going to move towards impeachment the day before she even saw the transcript.
Notice what happened there? I mean, this isn't so much about the content of what this miserable piece of wreckage of a human being is saying. This is about process. Tapper was getting ready, I presume, to point out, to go to that part where it says, you know, possible political bias, whatever, and then point out that the IG and the DNI both said, regardless, we find him to be credible and unlikely that political bias was involved. But instead of that, Jim Shorts Jordan gets to pontificate and get out the talking points that he was sent to get out. And even if Tapper gets back around to it, you can't unring a bell, and that stupid, mendacious, there's that word again, argument has been put forward to the American people.
That just shows you these folks are bound and determined to go after this president no matter what. They did. They put the country through 3 years of this false Trump-Russia collusion issue all the way through. And it was the Michael Cohen hearing didn't do it for him. The John Dean hearing didn't do it for him. The Bob Mueller hearing fell apart. The Corey Lewandowski hearing didn't do it for him. So now they come with this, the latest attack on the president.
So funny how those 10 credible examples of obstruction of justice apparently just disappeared from Jim Short's Jordan's copy of the Mueller report. They're just gone. They don't have, well, you know, that or he never bothered to read it.
There's a lot you said there. There's a lot of people that would look at what's in the Mueller report and say it's that's not nothing. But let's talk about today. You just described this individual, this whistleblower, and I'm really actually surprised because I've covered whistleblowers when you were on the committee during the Obama years, and there was a lot more reverence for whistleblowers during that period from Republicans than I'm hearing today. You said that he was a bureaucrat who hated the president or disliked the president, biased against the president. There is no evidence of that. Let me read from the Inspector General's report. It says, although the ICIG, that's the Intelligence Committee Inspector General's preliminary review, identified some indicia of an arguable political bias on the part of the complainant in favor of a rival political candidate, such evidence did not change my determination that the complaint related to the urgent concern appears credible.
And see, that comes after. Because he let Jordan steamroll him, that now comes after Jordan has made his point. And the laws of primacy and recency do not operate to Tapper's benefit in that regard.
So first of all, that could mean that he interned for John McCain 20 years ago. We have no idea what it means. Second of all, he says in that same sentence that it did not change his determination that the complaint is credible. That's a Trump appointee saying that.
Two things you look at. Our committee, I'm on the oversight committee. We probably deal with more whistleblowers than any committee in Congress. Two things you look at to determine the credibility of a so-called whistleblower when they're coming forward. First, did they have firsthand knowledge?
And second, was the president a Negro? There. That. Any questions?
Second, what is their motivation? Was there some kind of bias? This individual has problems on both of those counts. He had no firsthand knowledge. He heard something from someone who may have heard something from someone.
No, his sources were firsthand sources.
So he has no firsthand knowledge. And second, he has a political bias. That should tell us something about this guy who came forward with this claim. And now the Democrats are saying, because of this whistleblower, we're going to impeach the president. I say look at the transcript, and the transcript gives you no reason to impeach this president. Well, overturn an election where the people spoke, I think, loud and clear.
Yeah, they did. They spoke loud and clear that they did not want Donald Trump. They spoke 3 million more votes loud and clear that they did not want Donald Trump. But instead, an archaic remnant from our hateful slavery past, the Electoral College, made him president contrary to the wishes of we, the people of the United States, trying to form that ever elusive, more perfect union.
You know, as well as I do, that you do not need to have firsthand knowledge to be a whistleblower. And even if...
Well, you don't even, now because they changed the form. You used to.
No.
There's no evidence of that, and we looked into this. I know you're talking about that Federalist story. It's not clear that that's accurate, and even so, experts say it has never been true that you need to have firsthand knowledge to be a whistleblower.
But it's something that's critical when you're assessing if they're credible. That's a major determination.
So listen to this. Here's what the complaint says, okay? Quote, this is from the whistleblower.
It'll probably be the first time he's heard it.
Lower. The president used the remainder of the call to advance his personal interests. Namely, he sought to pressure the Ukrainian leader to take actions to help the president's 2020 reelection bid. Now, the acting director of national intelligence, Joseph McGuire, another Trump appointee, just like the inspector general, was asked by Congress about whether or not the transcript matched up with the complaint. Here's what he had to say.
I would say that the whistleblower's complaint is in alignment with what was released yesterday by the president.
So the acting director of national intelligence says that the transcript backs up what the whistleblower says, and we also found out that the White House did, in fact, take the transcript and put it in this secret compartmented computer server to block anybody else from getting it. So those are the two main charges, you know, and they're both true.
You know why they put it in the classified server?
Oh, I can't wait.
Because this administration, there was a study, Jake, right here, done by the Senate in 2017. More leaks in the first 5 months, state security leaks in the first 5 months of the Trump administration than any other administration. They should be putting everything in there with folks around you who are leaking information. We remember the call to the former prime minister of Australia. Here's what it says. It is a fact that the Trump administration has been besieged by leaks at a level that far exceeds that of any other administration.
I recognize you guys don't want facts.
Isn't that, that's kind of on Trump, isn't it? It's not like Nancy Pelosi hired his staff for him. It's not like his cabinet, with a few exceptions, didn't sail right through. You know, part of the reason we can't get a 25th Amendment remedy when one is so obviously needed is because all those cabinet appointees are loyal maggots. And it makes a difference. If he's got a leak problem, that doesn't mean that you put it on a secure computer that's code word sensitive and is used for a high level national security. That means that you've got an institutional problem with leakers. And then there's the larger question of, if this is the leakiest presidency in living memory, why? Is it because Trump is doing such a great job? No, the stuff that's leaked has been stuff that proves what a monumentally intellectually disabled boob this guy is. He threw a fit on the Prime Minister of Australia, who is more politically aligned with him than the Australian government at the time was toward the end of the Obama administration. Jesus Christ! He threw a fit on the President of Mexico and got made a monkey of. That's not national security. That's presidential idiocy. So in essence, in complaining about the leakers, Jim Shorts Jordan is complaining about the fact that evidence gets out there to the public of how hopelessly incompetent Geezer Disgustus is with regard to executing the powers and duties of his office. As Steve in New York notes, leaks. First, whose fault are the leaks? Second, I thought there was no there. Why exactly would you hide something on a super secure server if you had nothing to hide? Well, I didn't say Jim Shorts Jordan was good at this. Lee in New York, secret server. Why did they put the transcript on the secret server? Hillary's answer, Hillary's emails were lonely. But her emails! Scott in San Diego. Jim Shorts Jordan's copy of the Mueller report, the there pages in his copy have been replaced with the GOP Mad Libs pages. No kidding. Brother Deacon Asa pointing out, funny enough, the logs indicate the IP. Not the IP, but the log. Yeah, the logs do indicate that this computer wasn't there just because somebody brought in a Hewlett-Packard and said, look what I found at Walmart on sale. If I understand it correctly, it's not even tied into the internet. It's a standalone with a shit ton of storage so that it can be truly, truly secure. You know, the only way to have a computer that's absolutely secure is to not let it connect. No Wi-Fi, no hardwire, no nothing. So it's not like that this stuff was just gotten, you know, by some hacker, like the Russians did with the DNC and the RNC. Still love to know what's in that RNC hack. I mean, knowing what a bunch of bizarre, sick freaks the Republicans are, you know there's some gross compromise. Gotta be. Still, you do get the sense that Jake Tapper was a little bit flustered with Jim Shorts.
No, you got to protect from the leaks. If I'm the Trump administration, I'd be putting every communication in this.
The leaks are of accurate information.
Jake,
you don't like the leaks coming out.
Who are you going to believe? The guy who had first, back to the whistle, who are you going to believe? The guy who had first-hand knowledge and who was on the call, President Zelensky, who said he wasn't pressured, or the guy who didn't have
first-hand
knowledge?
We've seen the transcript.
That's what I'm saying. The guy who didn't have first-hand knowledge and had a motive against the president.
According to the acting director of National Intelligence, the transcript is in alignment with the whistleblower complaint. We all see it. We all see it's a conversation. Zelensky wants military aid, and President Trump asks him to look into the Bidens. I can't believe that that's okay with you.
Zelensky brings up he wants to drain the swamp in his country like the president is doing here. The president says, do me a favor. Can you figure out what happened in 2016? I thought we all cared about what happened in the 2016 election.
And then he moves on to the Bidens. And then
after Zelensky says this important sentence, in addition to that investigation, I want to do all investigations in an open and candid way. Only then does the president bring up Biden. And my guess is, if you ask the American people, when they look at what happened with Joe Biden's son, I don't know.
What happened with Joe?
Yeah, I was about to say that. Yeah, what was that happened, that thing?
Biden's son.
He got paid $50,000, Jake. $50,000 a month for several years now.
And the Ukrainian prosecutor said there's no evidence of wrongdoing.
Come on.
What?
Come on. The vice president's son gets paid $50,000 a month and gets hired by a company in an industry he has no experience in, and, oh, that's fine. And all you folks in the press and Democrats, oh, no problem here. Try telling that, taking that message to the American people.
If you want to propose a law, if
you don't make $50,000 in a year, and when they see the vice president's son getting paid $50,000 a month in a field in an industry he has no experience in, I kind of wonder what Hunter Biden did in those board meetings.
So
would he just look at his phone, check out the sports?
In May, the Ukrainian.
And he's getting paid $50,000. And then when the company that's paying him that money is under investigation, guess what? Daddy comes running to the rescue. The vice president of the United States
that's
comes running
That's not
and
what
says,
happened.
Fire that prosecutor.
Sir, that's not what happened. The European Union, the Obama administration, the International Monetary Fund, clean government activists in Ukraine thought that the prosecutor was not prosecuting corruption.
So you're saying Joe Biden didn't tell Ukraine to fire that prosecutor? I think he did.
He did.
Holy shit. See, this is... You can look it up. I'm trying to remember. There's a phenomenon out there called, and I think this, it's called the Gash Gallop. And it's a rhetorical device whereby a person with horrible arguments throws out so many arguments so fast that it becomes almost impossible for a person with command of the facts to address them all and disprove them all. It's named after, oh, shit. It's named after some guy who is one of those dumbass young Earth creationists. And you just throw everything at the wall. And it's not even about seeing whether it sticks. It's about making your opponent chase them all down while you keep talking. And this is that. Especially the business with the prosecutor. It was understood by the aforementioned entities, the United States government, the EU, the IMF, that the prosecutor in Ukraine was probably corrupt. And they all wanted that prosecutor gone, not because he was too vigorously prosecuting, but the fact that he wasn't prosecuting much at all, even though, you know, there was corruption. He was covering the corruption. And that's why Biden was sent to go and get him shit canned. Which the Ukrainian government did, because the Ukrainian people wanted it too. Now, the way that I just put it, that's not exactly hard to comprehend. But because of this Gash Gallop, it's completely turned on its head. Gish. Thank you. Our buddy, Chug a Punch. It's the Gish Gallop, not the Gash Gallop. The Gish Gallop. G-I-S-H. Cynthia says, I call it machine gun shit. I've had conservatives do that to me, and it makes me so mad. I feel like belting them a good one. I don't, but I sure feel like it. Have I told you lately how much I hate these people? Oh, I know, Cynthia. I know. But you see, as intelligent people, we look at this and we go, God, this is stupid. But for the vast majority of Americans, 30% of whom are diehard maggots, this is great. And so it turns out that the prosecutor that got fired on the word of Joe Biden was actually a hard-working, crime-stopping, crime-fighting prosecutor who was getting too close to figuring out Hunter Biden's nefarious game. Granted, that has not even an iota of a remote resemblance to reality. But that's what Jim Shorts Jordan turned it into. And it was intentional. Because every time this story comes up, they make sure that they get Biden's name into it, so that the word corruption will appear in the same breath with Biden. It's filthy. If, as I mentioned, if we were applying a judicial standard, a judicial canon, canons of judicial ethics standard to it, yeah, the job that Hunter Biden had may have created the appearance of impropriety, but Hunter Biden isn't a goddamn judge, and neither was Joe Biden. He was the vice president of the United States, and the appearance of impropriety language that occurs in the canons of judicial ethics does not occur in the executive branch. And so there's no one who actually knows what was going on who finds a problem with it. And of course, you know, whether it's Jim Jordan or Lindsey or Stephen Miller, they know what's going on. They're part of the hustle. And it's being done for the purposes of making sure the rubes don't... Well, they're operating on W.C. Fields' Third commandment. You know the three commandments. You can't cheat an honest man. Never give a sucker an even break. And third and most importantly, don't smarten up a chump. They cannot address these issues if they deal with them in real time in the real world. They have to try to turn them into something they're not. As much as I despise it, contrast that with the Clinton impeachment. If it was the Trump, if the roles were reversed, the Trump defense would have been to say that he didn't lie about a blowjob because there was no blowjob. And even if you had Monica Lewinsky on tape in a recording saying, yep, and describing it in every minute, veiny detail, Trump would still say,
it was somebody else's penis. We should probably try her for treason.
That's how bizarre this is. And there it is. Perfect analogy coming from Keith. Jim Jordan. Duck season. Wabbit season. Duck season. Wabbit season. He does not have to shoot me now. He does not have to take me home and shoot me later. He can shoot me now. And I say, shoot him now. James in Illinois, subject line, breathless. Says, why is it that Republicans ignore the millions and billions skimmed off by the skeevy little Trumplings, but thousands are just unconscionable when Democrats are in on it? Don't get me wrong. Biden should not be trading on daddy's name. But what the fuck? And the little maggots buy right into it. Of course they do. And they give Princess Ivanka a pass because most of the maggot men are sitting around there thinking, I'd like fuck her. I mean, I know that's coarse and I know that's gross, but it's true. You know, it goes all the way back to when Rich Lowry wrote that piece after Caribou Barbie gave a speech at the Republican National Convention, and she gave that tardy little wink at the camera. And he wrote, I'm sure I, like every Republican man in the rest of the country, felt like she was winking right at me. God, she's so sexy. And they're that way, and of course, you know, Ootie and Cootie. Beavis and Butthead. Well, they get a pass because they're his sons. I can't imagine that there are any women out there going, ooh, they're so hot. Just no, please don't make me, don't. Just don't. Well, we seem to have a split of opinion. I've always known that they were. I've always known them as W.C. Fields' Three Commandments. Randy and P.A. Seems to think they are P.T. Barnum's Three Rules. I can swear I heard Fields actually say them. Because Never Give a Sucker an Even Break was even the name of one of his films. Glenn with a note, subject line, all corrupt. Oh, my, they're all corrupt. It's like the kettle calling the pot black. All I hear are arguments of one corrupt person to another corrupt person. It's like listening to the Bloods against the Crips. They're all vying for control and the money that comes with it. Theater, all theater, and we all talk about one stupid incident after another. Sorry if I'm a little disjointed. I'm tired. I know. And the primary reason, you know, it was Mike in Cascadia who asked, hey, are you going to do this? And I said, yeah, probably. This isn't about the content of what Jim Shorts Jordan is saying, because Jim Shorts Jordan is a liar who has pinned his hopes to the coattails of an even bigger liar. I mean, what? We're up to 12,000 lies now by Donald Trump since January 20th, 2017. Do we ever stop anymore to recognize just what a monumental accomplishment that is? To tell 12,000 lies in the space of 2 years and 8 months? I mean, Jesus, I can't do it in my head, but all right. Let's just use the round numbers. That's 375 lies per week. That's 53 lies per day. You know what? You can't do that accidentally. You just can't. That has to be intentional. There's just no other way. And what's particularly bizarre is that all of this stuff happens while there's so much other stuff going on. By the way, a little background on Rudy Giuliani, courtesy of Monique. As a New Yorker, we were ready to get rid of Rudy until 9/11 happened, the real Americans. Southern Middle Americans called Rudy America's mayor. Same rubes that voted for Trump, who I point out lost four of the five boroughs in his hometown, New York City. Let me guess. He got Staten Island. I'm almost certain I'm right. No, there are other looming disasters out on the on the horizon. Did you know that Trump is about to fuck up worldwide postal service? I'm not kidding. There is a worldwide postal, for lack of a better term, treaty. It's called the Universal Postal Union. And it's presently administered by the United Nations. And, of course, under the pretext of China's getting it all over on us, they're making us look stupid. Because China, I guess, this agency sets international shipping rates and makes worldwide postal service functional. And so we may very well pull out of that treaty that manages the mail for 200 countries. Guess what one of the side effects of getting out of that treaty would be? It might become something approaching impossible for American citizens living abroad to mail their ballots in for the election, both this year and next. There's an outfit called the Bipartisan Policy Center Election Project. Matthew Weil is its director. He explained to the Washington Post, military and overseas citizens already face enormous hurdles casting their votes. These citizens may be forced to pay up to $70, $70, to return their ballots via private shipping companies, and it's not clear all states will accept ballots delivered this way. The UPU goes back to 1874. That means, I guess, that every president since Grant has had no problem with it. Grant had a corrupt administration. The administration of Warren Gamaliel Harding was one long grift. Nixon, Reagan, W. Nobody went after the Universal Postal Union. But guess what? This guy's gonna. Jesus. And, you know, it's not about China. It's about the fact that probably the vast majority of expatriate voters, well, they're not maggots because they live in the world. And they know what the rest of the world thinks. And they know what a danger Donald Trump is to the survival of the rest of the world. Oh, and oh, by the way, he may have napped through the UN, Trump's UN speech, but it turns out old Commerce Secretary Wilbur Ross, lo and behold, has a private email server that he does government business on. Lock him up. Lock him up. Yeah. Let's go over and see what Todd's got going on. Hey, Todd, what's happening, man?
Hey, how's it going?
I feel a little cross-eyed, but that's every day.
Welcome to the club.
Yeah.
You know, those are some interesting stories. I had not heard about the postal debacle. How do you think that's going to impact postal inspections with the fentanyl coming through the mail from China over here?
Well, it's more about rate setting, at least as far as I can understand it, based on what I've read.
Mm-hmm.
But you're right; it could very well be that some of that funding goes to security issues.
Hmm.
Oh, I hadn't thought. Okay. I honestly hadn't thought about it.
Me, I didn't either until you just brought it up. I mean, I'm like, oh, okay, one more. Because, anytime you talk about Republicans and postal, you know, they want to privatize everything. And it's just not, right. Ben Franklin would not be happy with that. I'm partial to that for a lot of reasons. But, so that's a problem. But this is like, what is these 30 to 40% of our countrymen who just refuse to accept the fact that they've made a terrible decision and they're just, I don't want to say they're stupid. Some of them are, but they just believe in something that's just not.
Well, let me ask you: Do you think in their heart of hearts that they really do believe they made a terrible mistake, or is this all just working swimmingly for them? That's not me being a smartass either.
No, that's a complicated question. I think it has two levels of answers. The power, the folks, the industrialists, they love it because they've got that massive tax break, 20% permanent until we can do something about it. But, regular people, as a Southerner now, well, a transplant, I'm around these folks, they like it. I'm in Trump country, they
make America great again.
Yeah, they didn't mean that shit. They're scared of people taking their guns. I mean, these gun shows are more permanent now than ever. Everybody's got these AKs and AR-15 knockoffs and all this kind of nonsense. They're scared someone's going to take their guns. But it seems to me, I mean, just trying to look at this objectively and trying to take emotion out of it, many of these decisions tend to benefit, you know, Russia. Because in the end run, the way I look at it, it weakens us.
Sure. Well, let me ask you this, Todd. I saw where, and I'll preface the question. Well, not really. Okay, let me just do this. There's that old saying that when the belly rumbles, the brain will learn.
Mm-hmm.
Is it possible for the maggots to get fucked enough that they'll finally learn? Because I've got a story here that does not bode well, for instance, for people in Alabama. And, you know, as strange and maggoty a place as it is, it still occupies a place in my heart because that's the home dirt.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Alabama is one of those states, so is South Carolina, where massive industry has gone in, particularly from Europe, but also from Asia. And they select places like South Carolina and Alabama because they know that those states have legal systems in place that will protect them and shit on the working people at every opportunity. So a Mercedes-Benz car that gets built in Alabama or a Beamer that gets built in South Carolina, well, you can pay the worker there maybe $13-14 an hour and have them thank you for paying them so little. Whereas if you went to a state that actually cared about its working population, it would cost more per worker per hour.
Right.
I mean, UAW workers have a manifestly better quality of life than the poor bastards who are putting together Mercedes and Beamers and Kias and Toyotas and Hyundais and whatnot all over the Deep South, Volkswagens in Tennessee.
Hmm.
Well, in the course of his ongoing attempt, and what this is, Trump is, his goal is actually to destroy the economy of the United States. All right? Because that would make his owner very happy. And he'd find a way to get some sweetening out of it, and so, you know, it would work for him.
I believe that.
Well, he's taken aim, you know, there's all the stuff with China, but he's taking aim at Europe now. And among other things, down in Alabama, they just completed a massive improvement project to the port of Mobile.
Mm.
Because there has been a huge amount of growth with, for instance, an Airbus factory in Alabama. And so
I thought they were made in Europe.
Well, no. They're made by non-union. Some of them, like the A220, are made by non-union workers in Alabama. And so the components for these aircraft, you know, they're assembled there in Alabama. Right now, they do like five a month, and doing five of those big aircraft a month is something. I mean, you can imagine the size and scale of the plant.
That sounds like World War II, like assembly line, like get it moving, that type of thing.
And as it stands, they're looking to ramp up production beyond 10.
Damn.
And they think
how's that going to happen?
And they've got the market for it.
But I mean, with quality control, that's a lot, man. Come on. That's pushing people. They must be working 24/7. That aircraft, come on, you know how many inspections have to happen to make an aircraft?
Oh yeah, I mean it's and there's an assembly line. But here's the problem. Those components, they're assembled in that plant in Alabama. all the stuff is, you know, like it, with any other modern conveyance, all the stuff comes from all over. Mm-hmm. And so you'll, you know, it's nothing when you're down there to see a big old flatbed semi hauling a big hunk of passenger jet fuselage down the road. Well, those things come over on boats from Europe. And they dock at the port of Mobile. And that's where they're offloaded and then to the flatbed and then to the factory. Well, given the rumblings that he's making about how unhappy he is with European trade, it looks like there's a substantial chance that he'll drop a rock on he'll do some tariffs on Europe, and the whole reason for this entire this lengthy explanation is that that will fuck a bunch of maggots.
But see, they are trained. You understand? I know I didn't give a lot of pause in between your last statement, but this is why I said no. I was like, no, it won't change him. They're trained to blame someone else. It's not him because he's the savior. He says what they feel. They believe in him. He's a very good liar. He's really good at what he does. He's got the hearts and minds of these people. I live here.
Yeah, I know. I mean, look, it's not exactly like I'm living in some latte swilling blue state here where I am.
You have okay Asian food.
It's only okay. But in the case of Alabama, the EU is the largest single foreign investor in the state. There are 82 companies doing business in Alabama from Germany alone. There are 51 Damn. French businesses.
Oh, that could sink Alabama.
There are over two dozen from the UK. And so with the beginning of October, they're going to roll out tariffs, particularly aimed at Airbus, because the World Trade Organization ruled in the favor of the United States in a trade dispute over how Airbus is subsidized in its home countries.
Mm-hmm.
And so the WTO is setting up the tariff schedule.
Man, he just can't resist causing trouble.
Well, hold on. I guess that's the million-dollar question. Is it a matter of him needing to resist it or even trying to? Or is it the fact that he is engaged in a full-scale war against the economy of the United States of America? It's kind of like that opposite-world bullshit with Jim Shorts Jordan saying that the good prosecutor was fired. Well, no. And the maggots think that he's got the American economy running like a Swiss watch, when in fact everything he's doing is to set it up for a monumental collapse.
Collapse. They don't see it. This is the sugar before the tea goes dry. Right? You see it like the subsidy for the soybeans. Because what you're presenting there, and I really was listening to you earlier, man. I agree. This is a problem. See, this is what happens when you have that much compromise on someone. He's taking direction. Listen, they are not stupid. The Russians, they are not dumb. It's because they had broken their people and are siphoning off money off the top. He's like, I want to do that too. And then they got the compromise on him. Sure. What does he care? You know, he'll escape. He'll go to Russia.
And you want a little bit of delightful irony here. One of the things Mercedes-Benz has experienced tremendous success building their cars near Tuscaloosa, Alabama. And you drive around, you know, in places like Mobile and Tuscaloosa, it actually looks like the economy down there is going great guns. And it's doing well enough that Mercedes plans to expand their operations, and they're going to build an entirely new plant to do nothing but make batteries for electric cars. Now, Alabama is as maggot as you can get, and they know that there ain't no such thing as climate change. But they're damn sure going to cash the checks from the taxes that Mercedes plant pays.
But those are jobs, and they want to roll coal.
Yeah.
I get it. That is ironic. You know. And it's going to put
at hazard 8,000 jobs.
Wow.
That's what Mercedes and its suppliers have brought to Alabama.
Mm-hmm.
You know, up in Huntsville, I think it's Google. Maybe it's something. They're building or have built a massive, I think, server farm, solar powered.
See, you know what? You're presenting a very interesting issue in terms of Alabama in general. I mean, I know it's the South, but you know, it's geographically very large. But we both remember. I mean, we were kids, but look what the space industry did for Alabama.
Yeah,
look how many different types of.
Well, that's actually the origins of a very long and prosperous relationship between the state of Alabama and Germany.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've talked about the little restaurant there that's been there since the 1950s. It's moved a couple of times, but it's called the Old Heidelberg. And you can get some damn fine German food right there in Huntsville. And it used to be nothing to sit down to dinner in there and hear German being spoken, because the Redstone Arsenal and the Marshall Space Flight Center was chock-a-block with old Nazis building missiles.
Well, okay, so I guess we can both agree that for some odd reason, and this is like, you know, like you say, parlor game, because you don't have the absolute facts, but I think you would agree with me. The end result, when you distill things down, this entity and the people that has surrounded him, that he has surrounding him, you know, the end result of what they're doing is weakening our country. And it's ironic that it's weakening the country, even though his staunchest supporters say they're, you know, they're waving the flag and they're making America strong. It's a hell of a thing. I mean, that's the way I see it. Now, all right, and he's killing us. Now, this story has been worrying me, because you know I love the novel, old novel, The Jungle, right, by Upton Sinclair. And I was appalled. The past few weeks, this article has been around talking about specifically the pork industry, but the meat industry in general. 40% of the FDA, the meat inspectors are being called off. They're being fired. They're saying the meat factors, you know, govern yourselves, do your own inspections. Speed up the line and do your own inspections. Pork.
Yeah, that's going to work out well.
Did you see that?
Yeah. See, I've been following things related to the abuses from the pork industry since almost the very beginning of this program. And the name of a little community in North Carolina is etched in my memory. Tar Heel, North Carolina. 16,000 hogs a day are killed and butchered and processed there for Smithfield.
Well, you know, because, you know, when we were kids growing up in a up and down 95 during, really, when you go through, you could, that area, Micro, PAX, Smithfield, in Virginia, and going through North Carolina, you could smell the smokehouses. I mean, it was just beautiful.
Yeah, but now you can smell you can smell the vast lagoons of pig shit.
Well, that's right. You sure can. You know, they're trying to kill us, man. I mean, trichinosis is real. Again, I like my bacon, but damn, now I'm like second guessing everything now. This is like ridiculous. I'm concerned. But I don't know what it's going to take. I'm not confident that with all this evidence that we can get the right people removed, because Bill Barr is a danger. He's always been a danger. And we have, you know, your program has been talking about him since his inception in this new administration. That's really a long terminology, but you know what I mean. I mean, he's a fuck, man. He's fucking a porcine piece of shit. Is it porcine or porcine?
Porcine, I think.
Porcine. Well, nonetheless, he's pig-like.
Oh, and by the way, just this is completely off topic, but I just saw this come across from a guy named Josh Lederman at NBC News.
Mm-hmm.
So Mike Pompeo, you know, he graduated first in his class at West Point. The Secretary of State is headed to Europe, I'm sure, for more skullduggery and shakedowns. But he's got a traveling companion. Care to guess?
Oh, there's so many options here. Is this funny or sad?
It's going to be, to use the that word so recently popularized by Republicans, disturbing.
Oh, shit. Oh, Giuliani?
Nope. Seb Gorka.
No, that fucker. Oh, Jesus Christ.
You know, the Nazi who used to be in the administration, but now does some sort of a blather fest, I think, for that network that's named after the guy who spilled his seed upon the ground, Onan.
But see, he's good at what he does.
Onan, One America News Now.
Right.
So right. Mike Pompeo, the Secretary of State who graduated first in his class at West Point, is taking a Nazi with him to Europe.
A pin-wearing Nazi with a British accent. I think he's Hungarian or some shit like
that. Yeah, he is.
Motherfucker. This coup was successful, but I think it's going down. But the problem is this Civil War shit that he's talking about. This is what I was saying last time we talked. He's willing to bring the whole thing down because he's hurt. And you know what? And he'll exit. They're going to kill him. You know, his handlers will kill him. I'm talking about 45. Or, you know, he'll exit and they'll kill him when they're done with him. They'll be done with him soon. And we'll just be left with the bag of shit.
Well, I think there's a lot at stake here, Todd. If we do not do something about this, the presidency will be forever altered. And it will be made safe for an actual competent shakedown artist.
That's the whole point. It's like, look, this is not about what party you have or you're affiliated with. It's not even about political party. It's about right and wrong and the, you know, a precedent. Because we have to get back on course. You know, precedent. That's what makes us different. How far we're not Russia. I mean, they have elections, but it doesn't mean shit. That, you know, the sham elections. We haven't even gotten to the election shit yet. This is fucked. But anyway, I know people want to call you, man. I just was, you know.
I know.
No, you don't. Yeah.
No,
this is really a lot.
And it's going to stay really a lot. This is going to challenge the mind of anybody trying to keep up with it all. People like Jake Tapper, you know, get millions of dollars a year. And so he has a vested interest in it. But the problem, Todd, is what about those of us who are only trying to keep up with it as a matter of sacred civic duty? You know, people getting up and going to work every day and then coming home and trying to digest a day's worth of madness somewhere between dinner and Sports Center.
It's unfair. It's unfair.
Well, beyond the question of fairness, though, it's goddamn near impossible. And so that's why I deconstructed what Jim Shorts Jordan was doing.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's one thing for people like the Horn Family Community Congregation that constantly consumes this stuff to see him pull that ridiculous attempt at misdirection, because we mm-hmm. see it and we can know it. But mm-hmm. man, if you've been working all day and you come home and, well, one, if you're watching Fox News, you're never going to know any of this.
Mm-hmm. There's that.
But even if you're trying to do your civic duty and remain informed, and it is a civic duty,
mm-hmm.
you're behind the eight ball. I mean, I do this stuff all day long, 7 days a week. And it's exhausting.
That's why you need 4 days.
Say what?
Why you get fired at?
Yeah.
Fired in the front porch.
Yeah.
It's hard, man. You're making an excellent point. You know, the average person, man, come on, they have, people have kids. They might get 10, 15 minutes in front of the television where they can really, like, focus, and it's bullshit. Because the major networks aren't going to say, well, you know, this is nonsense. I mean, if people have been following this from the beginning, they're not getting it. And even if you watch, C-SPAN, you have to have a playbill, like you're going to a play. Like you have to know, oh, this is a Heritage Foundation person. Because they're not going to say, well, these are right-wing, you know, asshats. This is going to fucking lie, you know. But we have to give them time because we're non-partial. They're not going to say that. You have to know that going into it. You know, who's going to teach you that? Who's going to say that?
Precisely. And there's, is anybody out there doing that? I mean, I think about the magnificent work that Dr. Bill does. And the heart and soul and core of what Dr. Bill is about is to teach folks not only how government works, but to how to analyze how government works, and mm-hmm. and to teach people why, instead of counting on what somebody says about something else that happened in history, just go to the primary source. You know, do exactly what, you know, the historian or the author or the propagandist did. Go and read mm-hmm. the source material.
Okay. All right. See, now you got. Now I got to rewind. See, that's the thing. Like, sometimes we, certain people, myself included, we take things for granted. Like, let's say, you know, just think, when I said somebody says primary source, I know exactly what they mean. But, you know, apparently a lot of people just don't understand or don't know what that means. No fault of theirs. They just don't know what it means.
Yeah, well, goddamn, Bill O'Reilly wrote the book about killing Jesus. That's a primary source.
He's probably my God. You know.
And today, my God, today, somebody asked Nitwit Nero about the whistleblower, and his response was to say, "We're trying to find out who he is."
But okay with that, man.
Because this is driving him up a tree. They don't know who it is. There's a little bit of identifying information out there. Don't think for a minute that if they learned who the whistleblower is, it would be on Fox. They'd fold space and time, and it would be on Fox yesterday. But it's driving. This has been one of the, as Jordan pointed out, Todd. This has been one of the motivating forces. A defining factor in this administration. It leaks like a sieve. Because in an administration that is run by a person who's in it for himself, everybody else has to be in it for themselves too. And so one way to do that is to leak as a means of covering one's own posterior.
See, that's raw meat. They can season it the way they want. Now, but this whole exercise is awful. The fact that he wants to hunt down who the whistleblower is.
He's already suggested by tweet that he wants the whistleblower executed. Adam Schiff is not the only person he's accused of treason. When you say treason, you mean you want somebody killed. Because the punishment for treason is death.
See, you know what? You know what? Honest to God, I mean, this may sound extreme, but we need to have. I don't know how this will work, but maybe the DNC, because the RNC and the DNC are not going to come together on this. But there needs to be some time bought every major network to explain what is going on. And explain how dangerous this behavior is, and explain that look, this is not even about your political party at this point. This is about the way this country is supposed to work and the way it's working now.
Well, I don't know that bot time would do it, but let me suggest, Todd, that's the job of the media. You know, when we get around to, if there's ever public testimony on the part of the whistleblower, you know, whether they put him or her behind a screen and change his voice, you know, do all that vocal shifting stuff or pixelate, you know, whatever. It will be that, and even beyond the whistleblower, we are at a point where the networks that go out not only over cable, but over the airwaves themselves, your ABCs, your CBSs, your NBCs, your PBS, they need to be, and maybe they are, they need to be making preparations for preempting some serious soap operas and game shows. It needs that that Watergate-esque saturation, and on top of that, it is incumbent upon the members of Congress to patiently explain to the American people from the rostrum, okay, from the committee hearing room, explain to the American people what they're doing and why they're doing it. Now, the maggots can scream and yell all they want to, but they cannot be allowed to say, nobody told us it was this bad.
Well, I don't know how they didn't know. I don't know how they didn't know. Everybody who's listening to this program, we heard this stuff from, you know, a year ago. So they need to get their... I totally agree with you, but, I mean, they waited too long. This was very predictable, in a way. This was very predictable.
I mentioned the business of him saying... We're trying to find out who the whistleblower is. That may wind up being, if you stop and think about it for a moment, that may wind up being another separate count of a bill of impeachment.
It's on its face. Prima facie.
Because it witness intimidation. I mean, I don't...
Sure it is.
If this individual is, as reported, a career CIA analyst, then that person has got to be pretty together from a psychological standpoint and from the standpoint of being able to deal with classified information and keep secrets and not talk about them. And
right.
So, but even under all those circumstances, if the president says that they're out there hunting for your ass, how well are you going to sleep when your head hits the pillow?
Bob, man, I think I heard you say this, and most people who understand how the system works already know this. The folks who are in the upper echelon of law enforcement, which really basically means FBI, CIA, and the other alphabet agencies, they are by nature not Democrats, mostly. They are not. It's very rare. You have a few, but that's not the point. The point is they lead the politics out of it. But, I mean, if you really want to get down to the granular level, they are not. And they don't talk about the politics. They do the job. They can just follow the facts because that's what they're trained to do. But, you see, the maggots don't understand that. And that's the box that we're in. Because remember, Rudy had, what, a year and a half ago? He said, oh, the truth is not the truth. What are you talking about? I'm an American man. We're in a bad fucking place, man.
Yeah.
And listen, human behavior, psychological standpoint, it's very simple. People don't like to admit when they're wrong. It takes a higher, you know, a higher level of development. And being, you got to really be, stable with yourself. Say, hey, you know, I was wrong. I was really wrong. Wow.
Oh, it takes courage.
So there's got to be a lot of that going on. Because people are locked in. And I see some food burning in the kitchen, and I really have to look into it.
All right, man. Yeah, don't burn down the kitchen.
No, and I'm not even at home right now, so yeah.
Oh, man, enjoy. If you get time away, man, enjoy.
I'm going to, and people need to listen to what you're saying, man. You bring a lot of good information out here. And, you know, that's what we have to do is assimilate and move forward.
True.
Take care, man.
All right, we'll see you, Todd. Take care. And that's Todd. I don't know, Todd, from a secure, undisclosed location. Les with a note. Maggots haven't learned in my entire lifetime, so I'm guessing no, the chumps will never wise up. Well, true enough. James in Illinois, fickle finger. You don't have to be guilty to get fingered. You know he's sizing people up. He's going through personnel files, trying to figure it out. Well, I mean, he's not, James. Come on. But someone is doing it for him. And he is coming apart at the seams. We're watching it in real time. You know, I used to say that that they don't put a blinking neon light up when you know, empire collapsing. It's not like a going out of business sale. It's just that each and every one of us, if we stay mindful of it and pay attention, we're witnesses to history. And not just because of this particular event or this particular affair. Everybody is. You never know. You never know when. You're gonna find yourself. I mean, think about Mr. Zapruder. Hell, he was just going down with his camera, wanted to see the presidential motorcade go through, and the next thing you know, he's on the tip of every tongue in the country because he got the footage. and we all have the potential to be that, but you got to show up. You got to pay attention. Let's run over to the stress line for a minute. Hey, welcome to the program. Hello?
Are you talking to me, Bob?
Yeah, I am.
It's Richard.
Hey, Richard, what's up?
Oh, hello. Well, I've been meaning to call you from here in eastern Tennessee, where I feel like an immigrant from the coastal places where I've lived all my life. And I've been looking into my own life and have discovered a psychologist named George Simon, who has done a lot of work on malicious people and the effect of malicious people on the rest of us. And the guy's pretty interesting. He's on YouTube and has his own website. And he was interviewed by somebody direct talking about Donald Trump as like the complete embodiment of narcissism. And the conclusion that he drew was that Trump is extremely successful at this. And I've been thinking that Trump is not stupid. He's no fool. He's using some of the techniques that Adolf Hitler used to gain power in Germany before the war. What do you think about that, Bob?
I think that's probably very much true. Remember, in her divorce deposition testimony, I think it was Ivana who said that he kept a copy of Hitler's speeches on his night table.
Yes, it was Mein Kampf, she said, from what I read.
Well, so, you don't just keep that around for casual reading. You only read it.
Oh yeah.
You only read it as a historian or as a fanboy. I'm pretty sure Trump's not a historian. Or you read it from the aspect of an interest in history. He was trying to the extent that he read it all, and you know we're told that he's barely literate.
That's right.
He was trying to learn things.
Well, I think he's been quite successful at it. And, you know, what I'm wondering is what kind of a candidate is needed to oppose him. And I think it's got to be somebody who is as unprincipled and as vicious as he is. And my favorite candidate for this viciousness is Kamala Harris. Because I moved here from California. And I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area for 40 years. I also was a resident of San Francisco for 10 years and worked for the city for 7 years. So I'm kind of interested in the politics of the place. And Kamala Harris, her career has, she's risen like a lightning bolt through the Democratic Party in California. I don't think that she has ever finished a term of office before running for the next highest office that she can. So this is a very, very political animal. And she got her start by running against her boss, a guy named Hallinan. Hallinan was the DA of San Francisco, and he was unusual in the fact that he was a progressive Democrat. She ran a smear campaign against him and just mopped the floor with the guy and walked away with his job. This is where this woman has come from. So
I've got a clip saved back from the bar confirmation hearings where she brutalized him on cross-examination and compelled him to commit perjury right off the bat.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm in agreement with you in that regard. I don't know. I mean, I think any number of candidates could do the job. I don't think Biden has the killer instinct, because Biden thinks that you can be friends with anybody if you just work at it hard enough. And that unsettles me. I don't think he's up to the task of a brutal, bare knuckles, bloody presidential campaign. I just don't. Wait a minute. I think I've lost you. There you are. You're back. Sorry. Yeah, you're back.
Yeah, I'd say, remember in the primary, he slaughtered every Republican because of the way he fights below the belt. They don't know what hit. So, I mean, as much as I would like to see Bernie Sanders, I think the goal now has got to be to get rid of Trump, no matter how it is accomplished.
And I don't know either. That's why I haven't jumped on. I haven't officially stated that I'm supporting any particular presidential candidate, Richard. Well, it doesn't matter who I support, because a bunch of people in Iowa, New Hampshire, Nevada, and South Carolina are going to make my choices for me. Because of our hopelessly fucked up primary system.
Oh yes, yes.
I mean, my vote doesn't come until May of 2020, and it'll probably be all over but the shouting by then.
Well, I'm thinking, you know, in West Virginia, you have had some pretty bad choices for state senator, right?
Well, for U.S. senator, yeah.
Yeah, for U.S. senator, and my cousin in Charleston actually worked for Manchin, even though he hates Manchin. He actually worked for Manchin's campaign because, as he put it, the Republican was so much worse. I think that's what you said, too.
Well, yeah. I mean, Pill Push and Patty Morrissey made Manchin look like Eugene V. Debs.
And, boy, and this is where I'm at with Kamala Harris, is that I'm disgusted by this woman. And if she wins the presidency, we're going to be stuck with her brand of horrible politics, you know. But what do we do? You know, like, what's job number one, and what's the best way to accomplish it?
Well, I simply hope that whoever gets the nomination will understand, as I mentioned a moment ago, Richard, that this is going to be bare knuckled and bloody.
Yes, exactly.
And he's going to
exactly.
And I know it sounds unsporting and ungentlemanly, and certainly not according to the Marcus of Queensberry rules. But whoever gets the nomination is going to have to come out and start mocking him relentlessly, laughing in his face.
I agree with you completely. Yes.
Because
and
that's,
I don't know what else to say.
Well, that, I mean, that'll cause him to respond accordingly, and it will not be pretty. Richard,
well, I think you got a point.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. Well, we know that this man is ruled by revenge, and that's what he's been doing about Obama. A few years ago, and it may have even been before his presidency, I don't know when this happened exactly, Obama ridiculed Trump at a press event.
Oh, no, it was at the White House Correspondents Association dinner, and he burned him to the ground.
Right. And when was that?
What, maybe 2011? Maybe 2013?
So,
But that was, it is said that that was the moment in which he decided to run for president no matter what, because he wasn't going to be treated that way. Nobody treated Donald Trump that way. But the thing is...
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Well, Richard, I'll tell you what. I've enjoyed talking with you, and I hope we'll get to talk a little bit more later. I've got one more call I want to try to get to. I've got a late start this evening, so I'm going to try to make up for a little bit of the time that I was screwing around with the equipment here. Hang in there. I feel bad for you sometimes. There's a big difference between East Tennessee and San Francisco Bay Area. And it's
I grew up in New York City, too.
Yeah.
So, yeah, but actually I'm involved with Indivisible here, so there's some hope.
Well, right, yeah, so you're not just surrounded by maggots. All right, Richard, you take care.
Well, I am surrounded by maggots. Yes. Okay, yeah. Talk with you later, Bob.
All right, later. Bye. Bye now. Our buddy Richard, formerly of the Bay Area and now of East Tennessee. Hey, Scott.
Bob, how are you? Happy Monday, my friend. Happy last day of September, I guess it is. Yeah, September.
Yes, it is.
How's it going so far? Is it okay? Is everything tickety-boo?
I don't know. It's been so long since my... it's been so long since I saw a tickety. I don't know if it's boo or not.
Yeah, well, there you go. There you go. I know that feeling. I was running some errands and only got back here to Shea Guru about, I don't know, 20 minutes ago. Got the cat fed. Got into my jammies, and now I'm sitting here. And a couple of quick things, because I know we're a little over time. There's an explanation as to why these people are acting so stupid. And by these people, I mean Republicans and such. That can best be addressed by a brief musical interlude. Are you ready for that?
Yeah, okay.
The hills are alive with the sound of stupid. And I don't have the rest, but I'm sure it can
be made. That's plenty.
Yeah. Anyway, but you know these know-nothings, and I forget which presidency featured the case against the know-nothings, probably back in the 18, pre-Civil War, I guess. I used to know, and you probably know, who were the know-nothing people that were running around? Wasn't it in like the 1850s?
Yeah, yeah.
Haven't you? Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I'm familiar, right.
Our current crop of know-nothings, really, I didn't know. This is the first time hearing of it. Oh, this is news to me. And I don't mean to be overdramatic, but we heard that kind of cop-out, you know, 80 years ago, 75, 80 years ago, in those little towns around the crematoria in Germany, and maybe even Poland, I don't know, occupied Poland. You know, the townspeople... Oh, we didn't know. We didn't know. And maybe some of them legitimately had no idea what was going on. But it's hard not to know when there's evidence, easily observable evidence, of what Trump and his minions and his cronies and supporters and enablers have been up to since Trump, you know? In other words, it's part of our civic responsibility to expose ourselves to good information, verifiable, reality-based information, so that we will know. You know, it's not just a matter of voting every 2 or 4 years. It's a matter of paying fucking attention. And I know that the people who work hard every day and get home and get the kids fed and send them off to do their homework or whatever, have precious little time to keep informed. But if they give an examination of how they spend their time, like in the car listening to maybe music, maybe a couple of days a week or a couple of commute trips a week, switch over to a program like The Horn, or some other reputable broadcast outlet and stay at least inform yourself that much. You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's absurd. I don't know what you thought of him, and I invoked his name the other night. I was listening to a speech that Gore Vidal gave, the late Gore Vidal, who I didn't agree with everything he had to say, but more often than not, he raised points that were valid and worth hearing. And he had a certain wit and even an acid tongue, but had also a sense of history, both world history and U.S. history, that I always admired. And through his novels, I'm told, because I'm not much of a novel reader, his historical novels, he tried to impart a sense of that history to people. And how well he did, I don't know. I did like his essays, though. But one of the things...
Oh, his novels are brilliant.
Yeah.
His first one, I think, was called Julian.
Yeah, I think so,
about
yeah.
Julian the Apostate.
I believe, yeah.
He did Burr, he did Lincoln.
Yeah, I think I did read Lincoln years and years ago. That must have been in the 80s when I read it. But the point that he was making in this talk that he gave, I believe it was a speech for the 125th anniversary of The Nation magazine, and you can find the speech on YouTube. One of the many good points he made was the woeful state of public education in this country. And I think the speech was from 1990, if I'm recalling correctly. So you know our education system in terms of public schools in many ways has gotten much worse than it was in 1990.
I think that's a safe bet.
And, you know, a part of the... Part of the function of schools for at least first through 12th grade is to give young people at least a rudimentary grounding in our history and a little bit about the arts, a little bit about culture, a little bit about our psychology, our social interaction, our mathematics, our language. You know, parts of speech and grammar and diagramming a sentence. I defy anybody on the face of the earth to diagram the typical sentence emanating from Donald J. Trump. You can't do it. There's not enough chalk or blackboards in the world to do it, you know? But, you know, yet they fall short in terms of education. And the whole premise that the country is supposed to operate on is civic involvement, being aware of caring at least that much about your system of government and your fellow citizens, to at least have a minor bit of information with which to operate. And that is going to be key. Whoever the Democratic nominee is, they are going to have to be a good teacher and a good illustrator of important points and principles to the voters out there. You know, most of us are already going to be members of the choir, but there will be a few Republicans and there will be more than a few probably independents who will be watching very carefully and listening, because all they really want is a valid choice. Something other than where we've been for like 3 years now. And it's not a high hurdle for the Democrats in that regard. I didn't need a filibuster there, but, you know, you raise these things in the course of the show, and you're right. You're absolutely right. I'm just reiterating, I guess, what you're saying and encouraging people, I guess, more than anything, hopefully, you know, to try to educate
I think if we want to expand on this a little bit, the value of reading over viewing cannot be too much emphasized. we had a more informed electorate and general populace when newspapers were going concerns, because there's a whole different dynamic that obtains when you've got a physical item in your hand and you're reading and digesting, as opposed to having some blow-dried talking head talk at you from the telescreen.
Yeah.
There's,
and you're right.
The column inches in a newspaper have more potential to deliver nuanced information than you can fit into a 1 minute and 28 second package on the evening local news.
Yeah, with context and maybe a little history and a little analysis. And not only were newspapers, you know, a good sources of information, most towns of any size, medium to major metropolitan areas, or large cities anyway, or major metros, most places had two or three papers a day, maybe one in the morning and maybe two in the afternoon. You know, I grew up in a place, D.C. had in the morning the Washington Post, and in the afternoon, the Washington Evening Star and the Daily News. And my city that I grew up in, Alexandria, Virginia, had the Alexandria Gazette, which a lot of it was stuff taken from the wires and feature reporters and commentators. But they covered the local angles.
And that matters.
Yes. Yes, because you've got to know. As that, I believe it's a song. Is it in the Music Man? You got to know the territory.
I believe so. Yeah.
Yeah, you've got to know the territory in which you live. I mean, in all the places I've lived, especially in my radio days, when you got to a new area, you had to familiarize yourself with different things about the place in order to sound like. Well, not only not to sound stupid, but to be able to relate more effectively with the people out there in Radio Land. You know, so.
And by the way, as we head out the door, just one last thing.
Okay.
A little because this may prove to be noteworthy. Looks like there's a second whistleblower.
Ooh.
And this whistleblower is a federal employee of some sort who filed a whistleblower complaint referring to, quote, inappropriate efforts to influence, unquote, the audit process at the IRS on the part of Donald Trump.
Ooh. Ooh.
And Richard Neal, the chair of House Ways and Means.
Yeah.
Is considering whether to make it public, and he's waiting on the lawyers and basically, I guess, Nancy Pelosi to determine whether or not that would just confuse matters or whether it would enhance the effort.
Well, I mean, if I'm understanding what the whistleblower is saying, I think it would not be a bad adjunct to the Ukraine deal and the phone call and the transcript, and, you know, because you've got, like you say, Trump apparently doesn't understand anything. He doesn't understand what a whistleblower is, and he certainly doesn't understand the protections granted by law to people who are bona fide whistleblowers. You know, he wants the opportunity to face his accuser. Well, you idiot. You imbecile. The nature of the whistleblower process and the laws is that you don't get to face them. And it's not going to be like
not right off the bat you don't. But
yeah.
But here's the other, and see, this is bad lawyering. It's not just Trump stupidity, it's bad lawyering. Because when you say you want to face your accuser, that means you want to be charged with something.
Well, not only that, the whistleblower...
Because the confrontation clause is specifically with regard to criminal charges.
Yeah. But the whistleblower apparently relied on the testimony, if you will, of 10 or 12 other people in compiling his report that he gave when he blew the whistle. So if Trump wants to face a bunch of people, I'm sure that could be arranged somehow if those people are willing to come forward. I have the sense that whoever the whistleblower is, he or she was kind of maybe not elected by the folks he heard this information from, but he was in the best position, he or she was in the best position
to file, come forward. Right, yeah.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
Well, and then there's one other thing that touches upon that, Scott, and it is this.
Well, wait a minute. About this this tax case and the Trump never-ending audit or whatever, do we have any particulars other than that bit of information?
No.
What he tried to do, who he tried to influence?
No, that's as much as we have at this point.
Because if it's an IRS matter, he is really fucking with big boys, if you will. They don't cotton to anybody screwing with them. Nixon tried to get away with that shit. His so-called enemies list, okay? A lot of those people on the enemies list got audited. And all he was doing was using the tax framework and the IRS system to harass people who spoke out against him. Nixon did. I wonder if it's something along those lines. But you did say did you say Trump's audit?
Yeah.
Okay, so it wouldn't necessarily be, because if it was about...
Yeah, he tried to use the power of the presidency to shut down examinations of his status.
Well, yeah, there you go.
But I did want to go back to something that you raised, and then we'll wrap up for the evening, because I was 20 minutes late getting to air, so this will at least be a three-hour program now.
Okay.
You know, the whistleblower is the whistleblower. The witnesses, however, are the witnesses, and there are, as you alluded, apparently a lot of them.
At least 12, I think, is the number that I heard.
And so... You know, to have 12 people dropping the dime on him at the same time is going to be, and it's part of what's driving him crazy. Because if he can find out who the whistleblower is, then he can find out who fed the whistleblower the information, or at least that's the way the thinking goes, if what passes for thinking. But here's the problem. Or it's not really the problem. It is that, you know, Trump is a deeply paranoid man. We've compared him with Captain Queeg.
Yeah.
Things like that. He's scared to death of being poisoned. Probably because of all the years that he's spent fucking people over and doing dirty with the mob. And so he has a certain amount of risk exposure in that regard. Well, that being the case, if the identities of the people who talk to the whistleblower become public, or if he learns of them, it's going to make him screaming, barking mad. Mad both in the sense of being insane and mad in the sense of being furious. Because above all things, he demands loyalty.
Oh, yeah.
From everyone, and feels no need to show loyalty to them. What if, and this is pure, rank speculation, Scott, what if one of the leakers is Princess Ivanka?
Oh, wow.
What if one of the leakers is... Dear young Jared.
Well, let's
what if
look
it's,
at
you know what if it's I mean they're his appointees. You know, again, the thing with Jim Shorts Jordan, the problem is, you know, those leakers aren't people that were placed there by, you know, the Democrat savages. That was from one of his rage tweets this weekend.
Yeah.
Those are Republicans that he trusted, who saw him in action and recognized what a danger to constitutional governance he poses.
Well, I mean, you talk about his demand for loyalty. It's not a two-way street with him. It could be somebody in his own family, and I think he would cut them loose or banish them for at least a period of time. You know, and you talk about somebody being driven crazy. It's not going to be a long, expansive Sunday afternoon in the fall watching the leaves change color in the mountains drive, Bob. It's going to be a rather short jaunt around the block before this is over, because he's already teetering, you know, dancing along the edge of the damn Grand Canyon of sanity. And good for us, you know, having this opportunity, and maybe a new one having to do with meddling with the IRS for his own benefit. Good for us. We live in a time when, you know, sooner or later, the system will, the gears will get meshed up in the correct sequence and present a space for an opportunity to occur for the system to actually work. Now, as to whether it's going to work this time, God, I hope so. I hope so. Because, and I feel worse for people like you who really do a deep dive into the cesspool and the information and the facts and the figures and the names and the places. You know, it's got to be exhausting to do that. I mean, just listen to being a beneficiary of your good efforts sometimes can be exhausting, trying to keep it all straight in my head, you know?
Yeah, no, and that's why I keep saying, got to strap in. We bought the ticket, we're taking the ride.
And it is reflective of someone's regard for our system of government and our desire for things to be way, way better than they currently are. We're going to come to a crossroads soon. And don't do like that old blues guitarist did and sell your soul at the crossroads at midnight, you know, for comfort and peace of mind and non-involvement. You know, you come to the crossroads, I think Samuel Goldwyn said, when you come to the fork in the road, take it. Yeah. I think he said that. But, you know, we have really got
to... And when you get to the Schlossen cutoff, get out of the car and cut off your Schlossen.
Yeah.
Johnny Carson said that.
Yes, and look for the big neon sign. But we've really got to just do our damnedest between now and November 2020. And oh, by the way, for those within distance of getting to San Diego, I understand that Elizabeth Warren's going to be having a rally 7 o'clock on the 3rd of October. And I may go to it. I've got to find out if there's any kind of seating, because I'm getting to the point with a couple of health issues where I can't stand for long periods.
If you can find seats and you can get there, we'd love to have a report.
Well, I was thinking that.
Let me just throw one more piece out there before you and I both go, because okay. when you know, these things, they look like disparate elements, but they may not be. Because there's work that's going on almost around the clock. For instance, at this point in time, with the exception of Republicans bringing up the Mueller report to say what a nothing burger it was, even though it wasn't, we don't spend that much time thinking about it. but it is still the subject of litigation. And in a filing today in which lawyers for the House are arguing for the release of the grand jury materials, a Politico report notes, lawyers for the House of Representatives revealed on Monday that they have reason to believe that the grand jury redactions in Special Counsel Robert Mueller's report show that President Donald Trump lied about his knowledge of his campaign's contacts with WikiLeaks. The attorneys made the stunning suggestion in a court filing as part of the House Judiciary Committee's bid for Mueller's grand jury materials, which have remained secret by law. Holy shit.
Yeah, well, there you go. I mean, isn't there a Bible verse, beware lest your sins find you out, or something along those lines?
Yeah, and pride goeth before fall.
Yeah, and that's the guy, obviously, if you look at his record in life and in business, he apparently is one of these people who thinks that he's some sort of privileged character, that the rules of reality and business and decent conduct in life somehow don't apply to him. Well, life has a funny way, Bob, of coming around and forcibly reminding people. And he may still not get it when he's sitting in federal prison somewhere or whatever. It's still going to be somebody else's fault. Unless he, at his ripe old age, opens up to the possibility of not making it about him in the sense that, you know, the axis of the known universe.
Yeah, that's a skunk that's a skunk that's not going to change its stripes.
Well, I know, but you know me, the relentless optimist. But anyway, the time is late, and you need to kick back, have the nurses attend to you, so you can be ready for another program tomorrow.
You
hard working talker, you.
Yeah, just put the little brain plug right in the back of my skull and
head on down to the home for regrooving.
And exactly. Gotta get regrooved. Scott, take care. Have a good night.
All right, man. Take care. I'll see you
later. Bye now. And so comes to an end that glorious, delightful week we know as Fundraising Free Radio. Thanks very kindly. Listen, I'll just go ahead and say this for tomorrow. Remember, there's always a challenge at the beginning of the month, the first of the month, Bruce's Memorial Challenge, Bruce and Shirley. And so there'll be $200 in matching money on the table if we fundraise it. So if you like to participate in the challenge, that one's there and waiting for you tomorrow. Thanks to all of you who keep the program on the air via Patreon, via PayPal, via the U.S. Postal Service. Thank you so very kindly. It doesn't exist without you. Thank you to all of you who share your precious finite time engaging in the program in whatever way you do. Thank you to our all-volunteer staff. Thanks to our chat room moderators. Thank you to Sparky and Steve. Thank you to our news ninjas. Thank you, Brother Deacon Asa, HeadOn.live. Thank you, John Fox in Australia. Thank you to Ben Birch, WhiteRoseSociety.org. And thanks, of course, to the hardest-working, bravest people I know, the men and women of Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. 20 years at the forefront of the struggle for environmental justice and human rights in Appalachia. And always, 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 Gina, it's all for you. Hey, it's been a fantastic September, y'all. Boldly into October we now go, our anniversary month. Later, y'all.